Science Button in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Today is Friday, November 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, President Joe Biden pushes effort to treat medical conditions suffered by U.S. troops deployed to toxic environments.
The president suggested a potential link between his son Beau's death from an aggressive brain cancer and his exposure to burn pits in Iraq.
The U.S. expresses concern about Russian troops massed along the Ukraine border.
And our concern is that Russia may make the serious mistake of attempting to rehash what it undertook back in 2014, when it amassed forces along the border.
And Sudan's main civilian coalition says it wants a return to pre-military takeover conditions. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. President Joe Biden announced a federal effort to better understand, identify, and treat medical conditions suffered by troops deployed to toxic environments. This as he saluted the nation's military veterans as the, quote, spine of America, unquote, in marking his first Veterans Day as president in a wreath-laying ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery. Biden's son, Beau, died of brain cancer after his return from serving in Iraq. The president's toxic air effort announced Thursday centers on lung problems suffered by troops who breathe in toxins, Associated Press correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
On his first Veterans Day as Commander-in-Chief, President Biden is saluting those he calls the nation's soul at Arlington National Cemetery.
Order!
The president saluted during a wreath-laying ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknowns and minutes later saluted all those who served.
You are the very spine of America.
And the nation will forever honor a solemn duty to care for them. His administration's announced a new effort to better deal with medical conditions suffered by troops deployed to toxic environments. The president suggested a potential link between his son Beau's death from an aggressive brain cancer and his exposure to burn pits in Iraq. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Ukraine's foreign minister has held strategic security talks in Washington with U.S. Secretary of State. The meeting comes as Ukraine's defense ministry reports that about 90,000 Russian troops have been positioned along their common border and in rebel-controlled parts of eastern Ukraine. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Ukraine celebrated the 30th anniversary of its independence from the Soviet Union in late August. But experts say Russia still poses a major security threat, with some 90,000 Russian troops now deployed near the two countries' common border for the second time this year. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken welcomed Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba to the State Department Wednesday and assured him that American support is ironclad. Blinken had this message for Russian President Vladimir Putin.
We don't have clarity into Moscow's intentions, but we do know its playbook. And our concern is that Russia may make the serious mistake of attempting to rehash what it undertook back in 2014, what it amassed forces along the border, crossed into sovereign Ukrainian territory, and did so claiming falsely that it was provoked.
Kuleba said Russian aggression against Kyiv will only end once Ukraine is a fully established member of Western organizations. Ukraine wants to join NATO, which Moscow strongly opposes, just as it opposes these joint Ukraine-NATO military exercises, calling them a security threat to Russia. Kuleba said American and Western support deters Russian aggression. And he told VOA's Ukraine service that Russia is also using energy as a weapon against Ukraine and Europe, and he called on Germany to act.
The energy crisis that Russia has created in the European Union market is the use of gas as a weapon. We remember very well the joint statement of the United States and Germany. If Russia begins to use energy as a weapon, Germany will take decisive action. We are grateful to Germany for its consistent support of Ukraine, but what is actually happening?
With fighting between Ukrainian forces and Russian-backed separatists continuing in eastern Ukraine, This is a crucial time for security talks between Blinken and Kuleba, former Ambassador William Taylor told VOA.
The Russian leadership has made some troubling statements recently over the past couple of months, indicating that they don't think Ukraine's a real nation, and that's pretty threatening. It's pretty provocative on the part of the Russians. So this is a good time for the United States and Ukraine to coordinate and to develop plans and reinforce the ties between the United States and Ukraine.
Taylor told VOA that the last time Russia amassed troops near its border with Ukraine earlier this year, President Joe Biden pushed back hard, and Putin withdrew most of the troops, but not all the equipment. Biden welcomed Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky to the White House in September as another strong show of support. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The United States and China surprised the COP26 climate summit Wednesday with a joint declaration to develop long-term strategies to try to limit global warming below 2 degrees Celsius over the next decade. It comes as delegates enter the final hours of negotiations on a deal to slow global warming, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
China and the United States are the world's two biggest polluters, and their future actions critical in the fight against climate change. So the two countries' joint declaration was welcomed at the COP26 summit Wednesday. U.S. climate envoy John Kerry.
The United States and China have no shortage of differences, but on climate. On climate, cooperation is the only way to get this job done. This is not a discretionary thing, frankly. This is science. It's math and physics that dictate the road that we have to travel.
China's chief climate negotiator, Xie Zhenhua, echoed John Kerry's sentiments.
In the area of climate change, there is more agreement between China and the U.S. than divergence, making it an area with huge potential for our cooperation.
Among the pledges were cooperation on controlling methane emissions, tackling illegal deforestation, enhancing renewable energy generation, and speeding up financial support for poorer nations. But the declaration did not include specific dates or targets. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres tweeted after the declaration, "Tackling the climate crisis requires international collaboration and solidarity, and this is an important step in the right direction." It has given new momentum to the negotiations as delegates try to agree on a final summit text by Friday, detailing how countries will limit global warming to no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, the target set in Paris in 2015. Summit host Boris Johnson urged delegates to grasp the opportunity.
We're now finding things are tough, but that doesn't mean it's impossible. It doesn't mean that we can't keep 1.5 alive.
Delegates are also negotiating how much richer nations should pay developing countries to mitigate the effects of climate change and decarbonize their economies, a pledge first made in 2009. Again, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
And it's very frustrating to see countries that have spent 6 years conspicuously patting themselves on the back for signing that promissory note in Paris, quietly edging towards default now that vulnerable nations and future generations are demanding payment here now in Glasgow.
The first draft text published Wednesday urges countries to revisit and strengthen their emissions cutting targets before the end of 2022. It says rich countries should go beyond the pledge to pay poorer nations $100 billion a year. And it calls on governments to phase out coal and fossil fuels, but with no fixed dates. Jennifer Morgan is the executive director of Greenpeace International.
Countries need to commit to actually come back to increase and strengthen their targets and their actions. That's clearly one thing. The text does include that coal will be phased out and fossil fuel subsidies will be phased out. I think optimally you would have dates by which time they would be phased out, but it's important that they're there.
With their joint declaration, observers say the United States and China have given added impetus to the summit. The coming hours will show whether the international community can agree on how to halt catastrophic global warming. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Cybersecurity specialists say there are thousands of social media accounts offering fake vaccination cards and promising to add vaccination records into electronic databases. Leisha Bakalets has the story narrated by Anne Rice.
Most vaccinated Americans prove they've been vaccinated by carrying a small piece of paper filled in by hand. It contains a person's full name, date of birth, type of the vaccine, number of doses, and the batch number. It was designed to inform, not protect against fraud, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. But this paper is still widely used as proof of vaccination in America today. As more companies request proof of vaccination, officials say more fake cards are being used. Cybersecurity experts say sites offering fake vaccine cards have moved from mostly the dark net to more widely used sites on the internet. In certain online groups, fake vaccination cards are being offered quite openly, and happy clients even publish their pictures with fakes. Experts from the Coalition for a Safer Web even tried it themselves. Fraudsters respond quickly and guarantee delivery throughout the U.S. Experts at Checkpoint Software Technologies say sales picked up dramatically after a federal government vaccine mandate for federal workers. Specialists at Checkpoint Software Technologies say one possible solution is to develop a unified federal vaccination database and digital cards that verify vaccination status, something some European countries are already doing. Leisha Bakalets in Washington, Anne Rice, VOA News.
A federal judge has struck down an order by the Texas governor barring school districts from mandating students to wear masks. This report produced by Zachary Goldman of Reuters.
Texas school districts will once again be able to require students wear masks in class. That's after a federal judge overruled Texas Governor Greg Abbott's ban on mask mandates in schools. The judge said the governor's order violated the Americans with Disabilities Act, a landmark 1990 federal law that includes protections for students with special needs. In his ruling on Wednesday, U.S. District Court Judge Lee Yeagle of the Western District of Texas said the executive order put children with disabilities at risk. Quote, the spread of COVID-19 poses an even greater risk for children with special health needs, the judge said in the order. Quote, children with special underlying conditions who contract COVID-19 are more likely to experience severe acute biological effects and to require admission to a hospital and the hospital's intensive care unit. Abbott's order was challenged by disability rights activists on behalf of several Texas students with special needs. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton responded on Twitter, writing that he strongly disagreed with the ruling and saying, quote, my agency is considering all legal avenues to challenge this decision. The issue of mandates to curb the pandemic has become politicized in much of the United States. Some school districts in conservative states where governors have forbidden mask mandates are choosing to mandate masks anyway. In Texas, numerous districts, including those in Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio, have flouted the ban since it was first announced in May, but others came into compliance amid state pressure, including a public list published by Paxton's office. The judge on Wednesday said the state could not enforce its ban on school masks, nor could it levy fines or withhold funds from districts that impose mask wearing.
That's Zachary Goldman of Reuters. Countries bordering Belarus on Thursday warned the migrants' crisis on the European Union's eastern borders could escalate into a military confrontation, while Ukraine said it would deploy thousands more troops to reinforce its frontier. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
Countries near Belarus are warning that the migrant crisis on the European Union's eastern borders could escalate into a military confrontation. Video released by the Polish Defense Ministry is said to show Belarus border guards carrying heavy arms at the border, including grenade launchers and sniper rifles. Reuters couldn't verify the grenade launcher claim, but it comes as Latvia, Estonia and Lithuania, which are both EU and NATO members, say the incident is posing a serious threat to European security. and Ukraine, which is not an EU member but is wary of becoming another flashpoint, says it will deploy 8,500 more troops to reinforce its own frontier. Belarus President Alexander Lukashenko is threatening to retaliate by shutting down the transit of Russian natural gas to the rest of Europe via Belarus. Moscow has reacted angrily in the past when Ukraine, another transit country, disrupted supplies of gas to the West. Belarus opponents allege that Minsk is using migrants to retaliate for EU sanctions. Large groups of migrants started flying to the country's capital, Minsk, this spring with the help of Belarusian travel agencies. They then head to the border and try to cross into the EU, sometimes with wire cutters they say were given to them by Belarusian border guards. Now, trapped between two borders, the migrants have endured freezing weather in makeshift camps. Video footage showed children holding up signs saying sorry. Poland has reported at least 7 migrant deaths in the months-long crisis.
That's Oriya Ali of Reuters. Sudan's top general has reappointed himself as head of the army-run interim governing body, a sign that he's tightening his grip on the country 2 weeks after he led a coup against civilian leaders. Thursday's development comes after the military has pledged to hand over power to civilian authorities. Since the October 25th takeover, more than 100 government officials and political leaders have been detained, along with a large number of protesters and activists. Sudan has been in a fragile transition since a 2019 pro-democracy uprising led to the removal of longtime autocrat Omar al-Bashir. At least 14 anti-coup protesters have been killed due to excessive force used by the country's security forces, according to Sudanese doctors and the United Nations. Sudan's main civilian coalition says it wants a return to pre-takeover conditions following a military takeover last month and supports calls for, quote, marches of millions, unquote. David Doyle of Reuters reports.
Sudan's main civilian political coalition has rejected any talks with the military in its first press conference since last month's coup. Al-Watik El-Bareh is spokesperson for the Forces of Freedom and Change, which signed a power-sharing agreement with the military in 2019. He said on Wednesday that the coalition supports Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok, currently under house arrest, in calling for a return to pre-coup conditions.
We stress that we will not meet with the military. Our position is unequivocally clear. There will be no negotiations and no compromise with the undertakers of the coup. And we commend the firm position of the Prime Minister, Abdallah Hamdok.
A top military official has said the coup, led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, was to preserve security and stability and correct the course of the People's Revolution, which overthrew longtime leader Omar al-Bashir. Burhan has said he is committed to a democratic transition and elections in July 2023. But he's under international pressure to reverse his actions, and the UN Security Council is meeting over the situation. Several civilian politicians and officials were arrested following the coup. El-Bareh said the coalition rejects and condemns the pressures being placed on those who have been detained, and that their lives are being endangered. The FSC also said it supports calls by resistance committees for marches of millions on November the 13th and 17th under the slogan, "No negotiations, no partnerships, no legitimacy." Despite struggling under an internet blackout, those committees brought out hundreds of thousands in anti-military protests on October the 30th. And have threatened a campaign of general strikes and civil disobedience.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. In other news, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius his, unquote, life support in the final days of the UN's climate talks in Glasgow. In an exclusive interview on Thursday with the Associated Press, Guterres says the talks have not met any of the UN's three goals. He added that, quote, until the last moment, hope should be maintained, unquote. Guterres says the ongoing negotiations need to accomplish more than securing a weak deal that participating nations agree to support. He said, quote, the worst thing would be to reach an agreement at all costs by a minimum common denominator that would not respond to the huge challenges, unquote. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Greece is denying allegations of carrying out migrant pushbacks, saying it has the sovereign right to protect its borders and intercept illegal entries to the country. It is not the first time Greece has made such a denial, but the latest accusation sparked an angry reaction from the country's prime minister. Anthi Karasava has details from Athens.
It was this prickly question by a Dutch journalist that left Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis fuming.
When at last will you stop lying? Lying about the pushbacks, lying about what's happening with the refugees in Greece. There has been overwhelming evidence, and you keep denying and lying.
The Dutch journalist was referring to widespread criticism from international aid groups and the United Nations that Greece is repeatedly violating international regulations by not allowing free passage to migrants and refugees seeking entry to the country. This criticism has mounted in the aftermath of the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. Mitsotakis has defended his country's policy on illegal migration, calling it tough but fair. But at a news conference after talks with his Dutch counterpart, the Greek leader broke from his usual mild-mannered demeanor to lash out at the Dutch journalist.
What I will not accept is that in this office you will insult me. This is our policy. We will stand by it. And I will not accept anyone pointing the finger to this government and accusing it of inhumane behavior.
Mitsotakis went on to blame neighboring Turkey for failing to block migrant inflows, using Greece as a stepping stone to the West.
We just rescued 250 people. We are doing this every single day, rescuing people at sea, while at the same time, yes, we are intercepting boats that come from Turkey, as we have the right to do in accordance with European regulation, and waiting for the Turkish Coast Guard to come and pick them up to return them to Turkey.
Mitsotakis' angry response seems to reflect growing unease over repeated criticism of his migrant policy, but also frustration over Turkey's failure to enforce the EU deal to block illegal entries to Europe in exchange for millions of dollars in aid to keep migrants in camps there. A European Union member state, Greece has sought action from the bloc for what Athens says is Turkey's breach of the deal. But in the absence of a unified response, mainly due to opposition by Germany, Athens has unilaterally taken a more aggressive stance to block migrant inflows. It has thrown up walls and boosted patrols along the Aegean waterway that divides it with Turkey over the past year. With inflows expected to grow as Afghans flee Taliban rule, critics and aid workers fear friction over Greece's migrant policy will only get worse. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
Former Australian Prime Minister Paul Keating has said Canberra's policy on China is misguided and fails to understand the country's rise. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Paul Keating was Australian Prime Minister from 1991 to 1996. Throughout his career, he emphasised the need for Australia to foster closer ties with its neighbours in the Indo-Pacific. Addressing the National Press Club in Canberra Wednesday, he criticised Australia's current attitudes toward China, its biggest trading partner. Relations have been fraught over a range of geopolitical disputes, including the blocking of Chinese telecommunications company Huawei from Australia's 5G network, and allegations of Chinese interference in Australian politics. Canberra's call for an independent probe into the origins of COVID-19, which was first detected in China in late 2019, also infuriated Beijing. It's responded with various import restrictions on Australian goods, including coal and wine. Keating argued Australia could have a civil relationship with China, even though there may be disagreements. He stressed that Canberra shouldn't be drawn into a military engagement over Taiwan because it wasn't a vital Australian interest. He also criticised Australia's plans to build nuclear submarines under the new AUKUS alliance with the United States and the United Kingdom. He said the technology would be outdated by the time the vessels were in service.
Eight submarines against China, when we get the submarines in 20 years' time, it'll be like throwing a handful of toothpicks at a mountain.
Alan Gingell is a former senior advisor to Paul Keating and the former head of the Office of National Assessments, an Australian intelligence agency. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation the former Prime Minister has accurately summed up Australia's problems with China.
He's right that the relationship between Australia and China at the moment has never been worse since we established diplomatic relations. And I also think he's right in pointing to the lack of depth of understanding about China itself in the Australian debate.
The current Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison hasn't yet responded to Keating's remarks. However, a government lawmaker, James Patterson, reportedly said the former leader's assessments were out of date. Morrison has previously insisted that the AUKUS alliance was in Australia's national interests and would boost regional security. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists from the University of Arizona in Tucson say in a press release that they found evidence a near-Earth asteroid might be a fragment of the moon. The object is described as a quasi-satellite, which means it orbits the sun but remains within a rather close distance to Earth. The asteroid, called Kamu'u-Halava, was discovered in 2016 by scientists working with the Pan-STARRS Astronomical Survey. The U of A team says it's about 46 to 58 meters in diameter and can get as close as 14.5 million kilometers from Earth. Using the Large Binocular Telescope in southern Arizona, the scientists found the asteroid's spectrum of electromagnetic radiation is the same as lunar rocks gathered by NASA's Apollo moon missions. The researchers say they aren't sure how the object broke away from the moon. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa News. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu from Washington, wishing you a wonderful weekend.
This is the voice of America, Washington.